You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colt Molesky, bringing daily Wolves content to you on the airwaves. Remember to check out the Locked On Wolves Fan Rag website, just in case you wanted some Timberwolves content in the written form. You can also check out past podcasts on there as well, with little blurbs and pictures and all that kind of good stuff. Make sure to check out the website. Today, it's a really gray Thursday morning here in Minnesota, but we have on a special guest from the New York Athletic, Mike Vorkunov, who is going to help us break down some of the ins and outs of the New York Knicks season. He was nice enough to join me today as I sip my coffee and look out the window on a gray sky. We're hopefully going to have some sparks here in the studio. Mike, thanks for joining the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
So I'm gonna jump right into it because I'm excited for this podcast. We have actually not had a Knicks reporter on this season. I've tried to get a couple guys on, and some stuff has fallen through. So we have not had a bunch of Knicks talk on the show this year. But it's been quite the year for the New York Knicks fan base. I wanted to talk to you first about getting to the party late, because if people don't know this, there's a different kind of race going on in the NBA, and it's not the race in the Western Conference for the final four slots in the playoff seating. It's not the race in the Eastern Conference for how the rankings are going to end up for the seating there either, especially in the bottom of their playoff race. This is a race for the final, or for the first pick, excuse me, in the draft. This is a race to tank to the bottom of the NBA, and the Knicks seem to kind of join that late. First, what do you have to say about the Knicks season and their tank job, and is it too little too late for the Knicks if they want to turn this around via the draft?
Well, you know, the funny thing about this is that I wouldn't say they're exactly tanking. They're just bad at this point, which I guess is a worse indictment of them than if they were intentionally losing. But, you know, like you said, they got to this point late in the season. I think, you know, Kristaps Porzingis went out February 7th, I believe, was when he had that torn ACL, or they announced it. And by then, they had already kind of started their downslide even before he got hurt, but you know, once that happened, before winning two games in a row this past weekend, lost 17 of the last 18 games, and really just, you know, it was a bad team, and that was losing a lot of games, and that, you know, in any other year would be climbing up the top of the ladder of standings, but this is not that year. I know you guys have been exempt from it on the Timberwolves side, but this is the type of season where you have nine really bad teams, all kind of weirdly jockeying for position, trying to get as high as they can, some intentionally, some unintentionally. And I think the Knicks fall into the unintentional group, at least as of where they were in January compared to where they are now. But it's too much. It's a little bit too little too late, because there's so many bad teams. It's so clogged at the bottom of the NBA standing that you can't really make up any ground, I guess, for lack of a better word. Because you have the Suns, you have the Grizzlies and the Mavericks and, you know, the Hawks and the Magic, and all those teams have been so bad consistently from October on that you can't just make it up anymore if you just decide in February there's nowhere to go but down.
So that's actually an interesting perspective on this, because if this is just a team that's so bad that they can't help but lose, as opposed to maybe a team that's trying to lose, what are your thoughts then on the trade deadline moves, especially getting Moutier on the team and trying to maybe bolster that guard position? Was this maybe the wrong move if you're trying to race to the bottom now that you think everything is falling apart? Or are they really setting up to hopefully get Porzingis back next year at 100%?
Well, I don't think the Moutier move was to win now. You know, he had been bad for the Nuggets, and he had been pretty much kicked out of the rotation in Denver. So that wasn't, you know, kind of like a league average player or someone who was going to contribute to a winning team. That's why Denver traded him away while they were in the middle of a playoff race. And so the Knicks decided to take a shot on him, you know, kind of buying a lottery ticket cheap for a second round pick and, you know, half a season of Doug McDermott, who they weren't going to re-sign. And so that was the move for the second half of this year and for next year, to see what they can have, see if they can rejuvenate his career. And I don't think that had any conflict with, you know, I don't know if you want to say for not trying to win this year, or at least with any, it had no effect on their competitiveness this year at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and their point guard position is kind of now a little muddled. I've seen plenty of articles that have been saying that Frankie Smokes has been put in a bit of a bind after the trade, not sure what his role is on the team. Can you just speak to kind of what that point guard position looks like for the Knicks, and is there any sign of who they kind of want to take going forward, or is it just they're trying to figure out and evaluate what talent they have on the roster right now before they head into the draft?
I think they're in the talent evaluation process. You know, mm-hmm. you can say that they have three point guards and that might cause some kind of playing time issue, but that's not really the case. You know, there's a lot of teams that play two point guards or two ball handlers at the same time, right? I think that's common in the NBA now, and that's not an issue at all. I think, if anything, they have basically five guys who can play in the backcourt that Jeff Hornacek has to figure out how to break up playing time for, with Trey Burke and Frank Ntilikina and Emmanuel Mudiay and Courtney Lee and Tim Hardaway Jr. And so I think that's kind of the bigger glut of playing time that he has to divvy up somehow. And so sometimes you have nights where Frank Ntilikina has, 16 minutes like he had the other night, or 20 like he had Wednesday night in Miami. And so you have to figure out, okay, if I'm developing Frank Ntilikina, do I need to get him time on the ball as the primary ball handler when he's on the floor or when he's sharing time with Trey Burke? Doesn't always work out that way. So I think that's the bigger conflict at this point than it is just how many point guards do we have, because I don't think teams run traditional one point guard, shooting guard, small forward type lineups out there anymore.
No, I would definitely agree with that. I think another byproduct maybe of this, hopefully, is that Ntilikina, he can actually kind of bolster his offense. Maybe this kind of spurs him on, lights a little bit of a fire under him with the addition of Mudiay. I kind of like Frankie Smokes. I've liked him over the course of the season, just with the kind of defensive edge he brings, as well as the potential to maybe build on that offense. We've seen guys who have struggled with their shot coming into the NBA really improve. There's a way to help these guys and to kind of fix the way that they play offense and to build them up. It just is a matter of doing it the right way. So when you're looking at kind of the Knicks, you're talking about they're in the developmental stage, they're just evaluating their talent, they're preparing to kind of finish out the season. It doesn't really matter with wins or losses, but they're finishing out the season, looking to the draft, evaluating what they have for next season. If you're looking at a guy like Frankie Smokes, is that kind of the guy that they see as a defensive piece who they can really build on his offense, or are they looking at him as more of somebody who's a blank slate and they're not sure what to expect from him?
I think they're more confident in his defense than his offense right now, for good reason. I think he's been an above-average defender at the very least this year, which as a 19-year-old rookie, guarding point guards and shooting guards is really kind of incredible. There have only been like 27 19-year-old guards in NBA history, and so to be doing something like that at that young of an age is, I would think that's a good indicator of future success. His offense, though, a little murky at this point. They want him to be more aggressive. He hasn't been as aggressive as they prefer. Sometimes he doesn't hunt for his own shot enough. He can be passive at times, though he's been better since the All-Star break. So I think when the Knicks are looking at him, they're still trying to decide maybe positionally what he is. I think they drafted him as a point guard. Now he's more of a combo guard in their eyes, although he hasn't really gotten a lot of time on the ball to prove that he can't play point guard, which is something they should, probably rectify and see what they have in him from that regard. And I think, that's kind of the hard thing with all this, is that when you're drafting 19-year-olds, especially ones who hadn't even played in college, he played for a pro league in France last year, you're getting them so far out from where their mature age is going to be, from where they're mature as NBA players, that it becomes difficult to forecast, especially earlier in their careers. So I think he's shown signs of promise, more so defensively, but offensively he's shown signs of coming along too. I don't think he's league average offensively yet, but maybe he will be in the future, and then you have kind of a guy who can guard three positions. He's still growing. He's put on an inch this year, so he's got that 7-foot wingspan. So he's got promise in a bunch of regards.
Before we move on here to other topics on the New York Knicks, It is March Madness. Lots of college games, lots of premier college matchups, as well as some guys exploding onto the college scene. If you're just thinking about the Knicks draft coming up this year and that they're going to have a pretty solid pick fairly high up in the draft order, and you're watching March Madness, is there anybody who has just really stuck out to you after watching some of these tournament games that you maybe didn't think about going into the March Madness tournament, but after the first couple of rounds, you think, wow, it'd be really awesome if the Knicks had blank?
Well, if I say that I didn't watch much college basketball before the tournament, does that mean that everyone surprises me?
I mean, that's a fair assessment.
I mean, I could come out here and lie to you guys and say, yeah, you know, I've been scouting them all season long, but that, you know, that's really not the case, having focused mostly on the Knicks and the NBA at this point. But, you know, there's guys like Colin Sexton who got to watch a little bit in the SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament that's looked pretty strong. You hear good things about, and Michael Bridges in Villanova, you know, Kevin Knox, the point guard of Kentucky. And so those guys, you start to think, okay, would they fit in with the Knicks and their backcourt and what they're trying to do? And I think at this point, the Knicks are still in best player available mode. It's not like they're looking for fit necessarily, at least from what I know. And I think because of the way their roster is constructed, really, like, they could add anyone and it would make them better, because there's no position that's kind of tied up at this moment except for probably power forward with Kristaps Porzingis. But, you know, he's kind of this unique player in that he's 7'3", can play inside and out, and he's a shot blocker defensively who prefers to play the four and not the center position, that you can still add a big man. You know, Michael Porter slides down, or if Mo Bamba somehow slides down, or the Knicks get up higher in the draft, that his versatility allows you to pretty much draft whoever you want and they could fit in. And because their backcourt's so unsettled, you can still make an argument for adding a point guard like Colin Sexton or even Trae Young, and that would work too.
You know what? The NBA League Pass has really destroyed me having any life outside of the NBA, especially now that I'm covering the Timberwolves. And so I totally get where you're at with not watching a ton of college basketball. That said, watching the tournament, Kevin Knox has become quickly one of the guys that I really like to see on the Timberwolves. I know that he probably will not drop that far, but he is definitely one of the guys that has stuck out to me during March Madness. So, you know what? I'm perfectly fine with people kind of latching on to a player through March Madness, and then afterwards when the draft season comes around, then you'll watch film and learn how to justify those reasons and those guys you've fallen in love with. So, you know what? It's fine to fall in love with a player during March Madness. That's totally okay for NBA beat guys.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, who doesn't want to make decisions based on the tiniest of sample size?
Exactly. That's what we love to do. And you know what? It's hard to get disappointed when you love somebody over a tiny sample size. So the disappointment factor isn't even in play there. We're going to get to some quick sponsors before we talk about Kristaps Porzingis and the injury he sustained earlier this year. Now, I know that talking about a team that's losing and then talking about Kristaps Porzingis, for a first time on the show, Mike, I hope you don't get the wrong impressions of the Locked On Timberwolves. We usually try and keep it pretty light and happy here, but we do have to bring up the Porzingis injury, especially when we're talking about the Knicks. First of all, is it too soon to worry about a 7-footer with sustained injury problems, kind of like falling into the same mold as a Yao Ming or something like that? Is it too soon to hit the panic button on Porzingis and his height and the kind of the stereotype that comes along with that as far as injuries?
I think it's too soon, only in the sense that before this ACL tear, you know, he had only had kind of little knick-knack type of injuries, the stuff that kept him out, you know, 10, 15 games a season, and nothing as dramatic as this, right? Yao Ming is 7'6". He was over 300 pounds. His body type was dramatically different and so much bigger than even Porzingis. I don't think it's too soon to wonder how many games a season he can play, even when he's healthy, because of the little stuff. And, you know, he'd have an ankle injury or a knee injury or, you know, back spasms or something like that. And that adds up over the course of the year. But The ACL tear was a little more flukish in the way that it happened and also the circumstances surrounding it. But I think it's fair to ask, you know, how much can a 7'3" body take? And I think that I'm sure the Knicks are asking themselves that. And I think the way that Kristaps Porzingis, you know, trained last summer, trying to get stronger, trying to get more pliable and durable, I think that, you know, he's cognizant of that too. So I think those are fair questions to ask. To just say that, you know, will this guy's career be over by 28 or 29 like it was for Yao? I think that's a little much.
And when you're looking at a guy like Porzingis, he has, like you said, those kind of nagging injuries, nothing as big as an ACL before, but he has had nagging injuries. And obviously the best player by a mile on this roster, but do you have to kind of have some self-control and kind of maybe handle this like Joel Embiid and make sure he's not playing on a bunch of back-to-backs and really be careful with his minutes? And maybe not even because of the ACL injury, but just because he's such a big guy and because these injuries seem to kind of follow him around, whether they're small or if it's as big as an ACL. You just kind of want to be extra careful with him and really control his minutes just so that he is good throughout the course of a season and not just amazing for the first couple of months. Is that something you see implemented in the kind of New York Knicks style of thinking around Porzingis next season?
You know, that's an interesting question. I don't think they've gotten to that point yet. You know, he's not that far removed from surgery at this point, so early in his rehab that you can't really even like project when he'll come back or how to deal with him or how his injury and rehab go. His injury heals and his rehab goes. And I think there's a distinction between Embiid and Porzingis that Embiid had major injuries so very early in his career, and knowing that, you know, injuries are the best indication of future injuries, right? And so you have to be guarded with him from the very start of his career, as opposed to Porzingis, who really isn't, you know, different than other guys in that he has smaller, shorter-term injuries that, you know, guys who are 6'6 also have. I think everything is magnified with him, and I think this year, I think part of the reason he kind of slowed down as the season went along is that it was the first time in his career he was really like the center of a team, the center of an offense, in some ways the center of a defense too, and that's a burden that players have to adjust to. I think maybe you make some accommodations for him because he's coming off an ACL tear, and because, you know, he does have a history of kind of like these small injuries, but I don't think it goes to the extreme of a Joel Embiid because their injury history is so different.
No, that's a great point, and as tempting as it is, I guess, just from the outside looking in, I kind of put myself in the thinking of if this was Towns in kind of that unicorn spot, if this was Towns, how I'd want them to handle it versus maybe how they should handle it. It's tempting to throw on the kid gloves right away just because this is the franchise in the future. But you also want to win the next season, and you need your guy out there playing minutes. And there also is the scenario of if he's not playing a ton and then you throw him in when you need him desperately at the end of the season for a bunch of games, then you have the potential to hurt him there as well. Kind of looking forward to next season, though. As somebody who covers the Knicks day in and day out, do you get a little excited about the potential there? You got a bunch of possibilities at the guard position, a bunch of different lineups you can throw out there. You'd have a top guy, kind of like a Kevin Knox or something like that, who is going to be a really good prospect coming out of the draft, and then Porzingis coming into the lineup. I mean, the silver lining here is that the roster could be pretty exciting next season.
Yeah, I mean, from a reporting standpoint, that's at least something to look forward to. It's gotten a little stale at the end of this year because, well, I mean, there's not much to write about at this point. But, you know, I think for the Knicks, I wouldn't be surprised if they had some, you know, dramatic roster turnover. They have a lot of guys on short-term deals or one-year deals, and as you said, they'll have a top 10 pick of some sort, and you'll have the Porzingis storyline when he comes back and how his rehab's going and all that type of stuff. It should be more interesting, right? Anytime you infuse more top 10 talent into an organization, I think that just makes it so much more interesting and so much more fun to follow, whether you're a fan or you're a reporter covering the team. Like, how can it be worse?
Exactly. It's always a good time. Minnesota fans know exactly about that with the influx of talent when Wiggins and Towns came in, and then bringing in Jimmy Butler via trade. So it's always just fun, even over the summer, writing and anticipating and trying to predict what that stuff is going to look like. It can get a town and a team and an organization excited for that kind of movement. Before we head out here, again, I always make the guests predict a score. The Timberwolves and the Knicks play on Friday, March 23rd, and I am going to make Mike predict the score here because, as always, I got to bet this game. I got to bet the overs and the unders, so I got to try and get a read from smarter people on what the score is going to be in the end result. Mike, what do you see for a score, and who do you like in this game to win, and maybe even who do you like as far as just a star player, somebody who could surprise us with some stats?
Well, what's the line right now?
The line was, last time I checked, I think they had it at 115 over-under.
115 over-under. Okay. I think the Timberwolves are going to win.
Or excuse me, 215. Sorry about that. 215. 115.
Curious about that.
215 over-under. Yeah. Gosh, what am I thinking?
I think the Timberwolves are going to win. And, you know, I'll go against the grain. I'll say that it's going to be under.
Under, okay.
Yeah, something along the lines of, like, Timberwolves 110, Knicks 98.
I like it. See, the thing is that as bad as the Knicks have been over the last 12 games, going 2-10 over the last 12, the Timberwolves, they do have a better defense statistically in defensive rating than both the Timberwolves and even the Cavaliers. The Timberwolves are 27th in the league for defensive rating. So the Timberwolves might win this one, but there's a potential to let the Knicks run up the score a little bit just because of how poor the defense is. That's what makes these so tricky for myself as a sports gambler. But keeping the Knicks under 100, I like it. That's hopefully good news for the Timberwolves.
Yeah, I think if you look since like February 3rd or something, the Knicks have the worst defense in the NBA. Maybe that changed after last night, though. I don't think so, since the Heat dropped 119 on them. Maybe the Bulls game changed it, but so I think this will probably be a little high scoring. I just don't know. I don't know how well the Knicks offense varies from night to night. So I'm just a little more bearish than usual on them.
Fair enough. All right, and before we head out, do you have anything to plug? Any articles coming out in The Athletic that you want to promote here?
No, just, I mean, read The Athletic, the New York City vertical, The Athletic NYC. Subscribe. I think we're doing good work over there, not just me, but all of our writers. And, you know, for the Twins fans, you guys can catch up on what the Yankees are doing. and so,
okay, yeah, okay. It's time for Mike to go now. It's time for the show to be done.
That's it. Go check out The Athletic NYC. Subscribe. You'll enjoy it. I mean, we have a great Minnesota coverage as well.
No, definitely. I am a subscriber to The Athletic. I check it out. That's part of my routine is I religiously avoid my homework. I'm in the last couple semesters of college. I religiously avoid my homework in the morning, grab my cup of coffee, read some articles on The Athletic. Great writers over there. Go check out the New York page. Check out Mike's pieces on the Knicks as they wind down the season. And make sure to check out the Minnesota branch as well. Great articles from all the Athletic staff. Thank you, Mike, for coming on, and thank you so much to the listeners for tuning in to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked